Morning, Stuart.
Morning, Megan. How are you?
I'm surviving. My allergies hit me like a brick yesterday. And it's funny, I don't usually suffer from them, but now I can empathize with the people that do. How are you?
That means something with your gut isn't right.
I mean, maybe, not necessarily, but potentially.
Don't know. My allergies are a lot better when I am not irritating my gut, even though I think my gut isn't right even when I'm not irritated.
I've definitely seen that in a lot of people. Better gut health, fewer allergies, or less severe, but not necessarily across the board.
Yeah. Well, I'm driving this morning, so I'm not able to look at a screen.
Okay, no problem. I'll go ahead and start here. We just have one question for today. Is ski season about over for you, or are you still skiing?
Oh my God. Not only am I still skiing, but last Friday was unbelievable.
Oh wow, did you guys get dumped on?
Yeah, we got 21 inches in 24 hours.
Oh my gosh, I feel like you
And we
guys have gotten more snow than we've gotten this year.
well, Hood always gets a lot of snow. I mean, we're over 500 inches for the year, but that's really about normal. It's the only place I know of that's maybe got more is the Wasatch Range in Utah. Well, and Southern California's gotten too. It's been crazy on the West Coast. But yeah, we skied on Friday morning and we skied for about 4 hours and it snowed 8 inches while we were skiing.
Oh, that's the best. Every run is like new powder.
And there was already, I mean, I've got photographs where I skied off the sort of more skied area into the unskied area and sank in. I'm on my skis and I'm up to my thighs.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Well, that means you'll be skiing for a bit longer. That's good.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm going to be skiing until the middle of April, and then I've got a 1 month break. I've got surgery coming up,
Oh, okay.
got a cyst that I'm having removed. That's a testicular cyst. It's not actually a testicular cyst. I've been dealing with it for a long time, and it's just like it's not painful, except for it's annoying. Anyways. That's gonna the doctor said, I don't think I'll be as bad as he says, but he says some people have swelling and pain for over.
I found that the healthier you are going into something like that, whether you injure yourself or whether you're going into surgery, you usually bounce back a lot faster than the conventional timeline,
Yeah, well, I'm sort of anticipating that too. So then the difficulty becomes, what can I do without screwing up the work that was done? And that's hard sometimes to get good answers out of doctors.
Yeah,
So I
they
don't.
have their what they say, and that's kind of their blanket recommendation.
Right. Yeah, they're not usually willing to discuss. Like I have a way lower, what I think is way below average, response for inflammation. You know, if I get injured, yeah, I get some acute inflammation right at the time, right after the injury, but then it usually goes down dramatically in 24 hours. I assume, is what a lot of what causes pain got after surgery is inflammation. I mean, there's some healing going on too, but this is a fairly should be a fairly small incision. Anyways, it'll be interesting to see how it actually goes.
Well, keep me posted and let me know if there's anything I can do to help in the
Yeah, I
recovery
will
process.
definitely. I was trying to figure out the best time to do it because it's definitely going to keep me off a mountain bike at least for a couple of weeks, if not 3 or 4. And it's going to, I don't know if it's going to be more better or worse from the skiing standpoint. So I rather delay it anymore once I got a doctor and got the ability to make an appointment. I said, okay, when can you do it? Okay, maybe April 21st. I'm doing it then.
Sometimes it's just better to get it done because then if you wait, it's like, oh, I could have already been done with this, and
Right. Well, I literally have something that's it's bigger than either other testicle. And so it's like when I go bicycling, it's like, well, where the heck do you put it? So, anyways, I'm going to be very happy. It's been something I've had for 6 or 8 years, and it just keeps getting bigger. It's just like, okay, I got to fix this.
Well,
And I was
good.
very happy
Glad.
because regular doctors had just said, well, you can probably get it drained and but it might just come back. When I saw a specialist, the specialist said, oh no, that's not even what the regular doctor said it is. It's this. He described what it was and how it happens. He goes, this is what I'm going to do. And he says, they almost never come back. So,
It's worth seeing a
like, perfect.
specialist.
So cross your fingers. I hope he's right.
Yes, I hope so too.
I'm sorry. I kind of got you sidetracked on
No,
that.
that's
But
okay.
along those same lines, we had talked about a varicocelectomy. And I discussed that with the urologist too. And he looked at, he examined my varicocele and he said, I don't recommend it because yours isn't that bad. He says, I doubt it's influencing the circulation to your testicle that much. This is the part where I don't necessarily know that he knows anything about it, right? Or that it's going to influence your amount of testosterone. He says, but there is a risk when you do one of those of just ruining the blood flow entirely. So that was what he was saying. He didn't want to do a varicocele.
Well, that makes sense. And I always am, I'm always happy to hear when the answer isn't always like, procedure, surgery, even if it's minor. It's nice to hear that they were a little bit more conservative in their thinking.
Yeah. And, I was the one who actually was saying, maybe we want to do something about this. And he's looking at it going, I wouldn't, no, I don't like, I'm not sure he would do it, basically. Maybe I could find somebody else to do it. But, and I, when he described the failure and that he was concerned about that, I have to assume it happens often enough that he didn't want to do it.
That makes sense.
And I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. He goes, yours isn't that bad. And, I actually, when he examined my cyst, he didn't even notice it. When I said I had it, when I remembered to ask him about it before the appointment was over, he goes, oh, well, I didn't notice that. Let me examine again. Examine and said, oh, yeah, you do have it, but it's not very bad, not very severe. I wouldn't mess with it. So, it's okay. Figured I would go with that advice.
That makes sense to me, and that's good to know.
Yeah. All right. So now to the question, whoever asked the question.
All right. So here's today's question. There are a number of platforms like Inside Tracker popping up, seems to be a trend. What do you think of them? Worth someone checking out? Is our understanding of genetics good enough yet to enable recommendations like the ones at that Wild Health gives? The sample report is interesting. They give specific dietary recommendations, supposedly based on genetic markers, i.e., you don't likely do well with carbs based on your genetics. So before I jump into my answer here, I'll go ahead and just briefly show the sample report, and we'll link to this in the show notes as well. But it's very nicely done. It's nice and colorful. They have your little right here, like your fat and carb tolerance slash intolerance scale. So they give information or recommendations on diet and nutrition, on they give some on exercise and recovery. They give some, I think that's largely what they, and sleep as well. So this is Wild Health. Inside Tracker does something similar. And both companies are looking at blood work as well. And just regarding blood work, generally speaking, I'm a fan of collecting and analyzing it as we do at MBT, as most people know. Blood work is by far the most evidence-based data that you can collect. It looks like, again, these other companies, Inside Tracker and Wild Health, are doing, the blood work analysis, but with the addition of genetics and DNA testing. And like I said, Wild Health sample report is beautifully done. However, kind of the punchline here is that we're still not at the point in scientific discovery where we can accurately give personalized recommendations based off of genetics. I understand that that sounds super appealing from both a consumer standpoint and also a business standpoint. And again, at least these companies are also looking at blood work concurrently and not just genetics. So they're kind of looking at like the phenotype and the genotype together. But I would not put a lot of emphasis on genetic testing in most cases for most people. We care a lot more about the phenotype, so how your genes are actually expressing themselves, both objectively and subjectively, than we do about your MTHFR status per se, or your, what are some of these, FTO1 status. That's one of these that's supposedly related to carbon fat, quote unquote, tolerance. In some cases, genetics may help explain a phenotype, but genetics alone usually are not deterministic when it comes to things like how you should eat and how you should exercise and how you should sleep. At the end of the day, this isn't a super, you know, sexy opinion, but we should all be doing largely the same general things to support our health. And then, of course, there's some personalization that can happen on top of that. But, you know, I look at some of these recommendations from the Wild Health sample report, and they're not bad recommendations by any means, but they're mostly things that everyone should be doing. And, you know, you don't need a genetic test to tell you that. Or in the case of the dietary macronutrients and what they're calling your fat and carb tolerance or intolerance, those just unfortunately are not founded in good science. If I'm being generous, I could say that for some people, maybe knowing that they have a specific gene might slightly, that might slightly predispose them to a certain health condition, might help with a healthy and sustainable behavior change. Like it could be a motivator. But even then, genetic-based recommendations are usually not backed by quality science and are superfluous at best and harmful at worst due to the kind of deterministic mindsets that they can create. Not a super popular opinion, especially these days with companies like Wild Health popping up. But I think that that opinion is more grounded in science than giving people recommendations based off of genetics. Maybe in the future that will change, and I'm more than happy to change my mind and my stance on this if, you know, if the science suggests that we should, and then we'll truly be able to practice more precision-based medicine that's based on DNA testing. But there are so many gene-to-gene interactions and gene-to-environment interactions that we can't just pull out a few genes like they do here, PPAR gamma, FTO, let that determine how you should eat or exercise or sleep or even what supplements you should take. And Tommy has a great talk that he did on this topic at AHS a few years back, and we can link to that in the show notes. The science really hasn't changed much, if at all, since then, and he does the topic way more justice than I ever could. So those are my thoughts on these companies, not inherently bad from the perspective of the blood work that they're doing, but I'm not a fan of the genetic testing. All right. That's all I have. Stuart, if you have anything to add or anything unrelated, please go ahead.
Just a comment, I'm sure somebody will, but make sure the link to Tommy's talk is in the show notes.
Yeah. Yep. We will.
I know you would, but I just had to say it. So it's like, I really want to go listen to that talk.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's, what is it called? Lies, Damn Lies in Genetics, maybe, is a clever, yeah, clever title.
I have one.
Stuart, you're breaking up. I can't hear you at all.
Moving, so I hope it gets better. Can you Oh. Oh.
You're better. You're better now. Try again.
Okay. I got some place. I know about just
No,
like
I can't make out what you're saying. I know you're moving, so you can wait a minute or two and see if your reception gets better.
seems like it should be better now. Is it
Oh,
better?
yep, you're great now.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Yeah, I was just saying it seems like epigenetics plays so much bigger role than genetics, things you could do to push your epigenetics. And then the other thing that I think just seems like it has to play a big role in anything when you talk about genetics is what's the genetics of your microbiome? Right? Because the microbiome is such a huge piece that we don't really understand. And the genetics of your microbiome could be wildly different from another person with an identical twin, but somehow you got separated in different environments, different everything. Your overall health could be different because of your microbiome.
Yep,
Seems
absolutely.
like.
Yeah, and
But
that,
that's a guessing.
that's
But.
it, yeah, I completely agree, and that's one of the reasons why, looking at your fat and carb tolerance through your genetics alone, like that's probably way more, if anything, way more based off of your microbiome and the composition of it and the genetics of it versus your personal genetics.
Yeah, I've definitely gotten down sort of a little dive of following Dr. Davis, his podcast. So, and I just finished listening to a short podcast that was just where he thinks that missing microbes in your gut influences, among other things, your ability to, or the signaling to make oxytocin, and then the downstream effects of not having enough oxytocin.
Sorry,
So,
who did you say you cut out there when you mentioned the what podcast it was?
Dr. William Davis,
Oh
Wheat
yeah.
Belly author.
Yep. Did you try
This would happen.
your yogurt yet?
I've made two batches and I've been eating it. And I'm not having any dramatic change in my quality of my bowel movements, but I don't feel like I'm getting any negative in terms of the feeling of the rest of my gut.
Okay,
So
that's good.
I don't know what to think at this point. Also, I definitely want to get the strain that I'm not using now that's in the bacteria and strain that's in his SIBO yogurt, just because it seems like there's three strains he uses in the SIBO yogurt. One of them, I just listened to a podcast specifically about that from him, and one of them is mostly just to improve the taste. He says it's beneficial, but he's not the one that does the heavy lifting,
Oh, interesting.
basically. But he says the yogurt's pretty sour otherwise, and people are more likely to eat it if he puts the third strain in that makes it less sour. And then I can't remember which one it is because it's not the Lactobacillus rotari, it's the other one, it's the SIBO. And the thing he talked about was that those, particularly this one, had the ability to, when it lives in your gut or is in your gut, it's emitting something that acts at. And I'm going to use a slightly different term than he did, but I think it'll make sense. He says it emits some bactericides that help reduce the level of what you think of as bad bacteria in your upper small intestine.
Yep.
So, and that one emits a lot more than the one I'm not using emits a lot more of that than anything else. So I'm really curious to try that. So, but I'm going on vacation at the end of this week, so it'll be a couple of weeks before I make it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool how probiotics can release these bactericides. We think of, antibiotics and herbal antimicrobials being the things that kind of reduce populations of more, bugs that become can that can become more pathogenic if overgrown, but probiotics can do the same thing, which is really cool.
Yeah. So, he What he said was in patients where he, I guess, if I remember, I'll try and send it to you, because there was this, I think it's really one of his recent podcasts, which was just 20 or 30 minutes, talking about what he believes about SIBO and what SIBO yogurt does, you know, or what it's not even what it does so much as, I mean, a lot of his stuff at this point is, it seems, is experimenting with things like this and regimes or whatever, and then getting feedback from his patients saying, okay, well, this is my experience of what it did. Now maybe we'll try and do some science and see if we can actually see if we can prove that's what it did.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. You know, one of them's just like, okay, we got a few people who did it. That's what it was like. But he was talking about, and I'm sorry, I'm not going to remember it right now. A specific drug that if you go to a doctor and say you have SIBO, if they even know what SIBO is, that they're most likely going to prescribe any set of drug. And he said the drug is about, I forget what percent, 30, 40, 50% effective or something.
Oh, probably rifaximin.
Yeah, that sounds right, yeah.
Or potentially neomycin, which is another one.
No, I think it was the first one.
Rifaximin is typically.
Yeah, rifaximin. And he says, but it does nothing, of course, to restore any microbes that you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It might wipe out the ones you don't want, but how long does that last? And then he also talked about one or two herbal remedies that are mixtures of different herbs that were sold commercially, and he gave names of them for them. And I'm not going to remember those either without looking them up.
Candy Bacton from Metagenics, and then Biotics Research has a couple, FC-Cytal and Dysbiocide. Those have been shown to
be. And he talked about what percentage of people he thought got an improvement that he'd worked with using that. And then he came up with this SIBO yogurt. And he said he was going to be excited if he got 30 or 40% of the people got an improvement with SIBO yogurt. And he had a 90% of the people he did it with that had an improvement.
Wow.
So
it's impressive.
Yeah. And so I'm just like, okay, well, I should try that. You know, what's the downside of trying this?
Very little. Yeah.
Right. That's kind of what I figured. You know, they're known, they're studied. He's very careful to say, you got to get the right strain. You got to get it from these sources and that. Yeah. So yeah, that's going to be the next thing I try. But it didn't take me very long to really like the taste of the sugar. It's a bit on the sour side when you first eat it the first time. And it definitely has a different smell. Like my partner, she smelled it when, well, and it's funny because I think that most people don't get a chance to smell yogurt when it's warm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's being cultured at 100 degrees. You pull the lid off it, the whole kitchen starts smelling like it's yogurt. And my partner, she just goes, I said, do you want to try some? And she's like, no, I don't like that smell. So I don't know. She might change her mind. It's not, the smell is much more prevalent when it's 100 degrees and you're just open container and fermented it than after refrigerated. It was still a little bit like cottage cheese the second batch, but not as much as the first batch.
Yeah,
don't think it has seen, from what I can tell, it has no negative effect on what it might or might not do for. So
no, I wouldn't think so. Well, you have to keep me posted, especially when
I will.
You try the adding the other strains for the SIBO yogurt.
Yeah. Well, one strain that seems to be the one that has the largest number of sort of bactericides that it releases seems like it would be good. And again, the thing that he ended up saying was that their testing showed that after 36 hours, you went from like one pill of BioGaia's. Whichever one it is that I'm currently using, that it has like what, 200 million CFU.
Mm-hmm.
And he said 250 billion CFU and a half a cup of yogurt was what they measured. So, I mean, it's a huge, huge difference in quantity, which basically, you know, what I read through what he said or interpret what he says is, that's the thing that he can see is different between taking the pills and eating his yogurt.
Yeah.
it's just getting a quantity of dose that you're giving yourself. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and it's interesting because the BioGaia, you know, just pills or tablets are well studied, and usually it's, you know, a tablet or two a day as the therapeutic dose in these studies. But, you know, it just brings up the idea of for everything that we study, we only study a certain dose, not usually a range of doses. So what if there is a greater therapeutic benefit of, you know, going much higher? That's where these observational anecdotes come in, and then you can kind of backtrack and do the science.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting to me because nobody's going to buy, nobody's going to take a whole bottle of pills of BioGaia every day.
No.
Right. To find out.
Yeah.
And he said, and I don't know if this is true, is the BioGaia and that, and maybe it's a different pill, but that it was actually designed for infants. You get that idea?
I know they have an infant range. I don't know if it was originally designed for infants, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, yeah. I don't know that I have anything else really interesting today, other than the fact that I had another really successful day in terms of food on Friday skiing. And it was another day where I just decided, okay, I'm going to eat breakfast at 5:30 in the morning, and I'm going to eat it. And I made sure I fueled really well the day before, like if anything, I overfueled, and I did not run out of energy skiing. My partner did. We left them out before I was done. You know, I was fine leaving, but I was like, yeah, I could ski at least 3 or 4 more runs easy.
That's great.
So yeah, it just seemed to help. Yeah, it was interesting because I don't know. I wish I had some really good method. I guess if I started out and measured my thighs or something, maybe I could measure them now and say they're bigger. I have a feeling that I have bigger legs than I did 4 years ago. And I wish I had a good way of knowing how much of that was contributing to my weight gain.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I know I've also gained a little bit of fat around. Most of it just seems to be like I have more subcutaneous fat over my entire body now than I did 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And not a lot, but just a little, you know, feel of it. And then maybe it's just more collagen. I got more skin thickness.
Yep.
In most areas. Yeah, it's amazing. So are you done skiing or snowboarding? I forget. You're a snowboarder.
No, I'm guessing it'll be middle of April or so for us as well, although some of the resorts here won't close until, I don't know, sometime in May. So we'll see. Probably depends
on the resort, what their attitude is, because sometimes it's like, well, we know we're not making money, and some of them just say they were open until us.
Yeah.
And of course Timberline, which is one of the places we bought a spring pass for Meadows, which is the second big resort on Mount Hood that we weren't going to earlier. So now we're going to Meadows. But Timberline is the one that has the Palmer chair, which isn't even open in the winter because it gets too many storms that high up on the mountain. And they open it April or May, and then they run it all the way through August.
Oh, wow.
Because they've got a snowfield up there that stays around. It used to stay around year round. I think at this point it really does. They start doing, I call it snow farming up there sometime. They probably have been for the last 2 months, where once there's a good layer of snow, they go up there and actually cut big V trenches in it. And then when the wind blows, it fills them in.
Oh,
and then they go
smart.
And do it again.
I like that.
Yeah, so they're just causing more snow to get stuck in the area. They want there to be snow for the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so cool. Yeah. No, our ski passes go through May 31st at Timberline, probably through the end of the season at Meadows at this point. So, but I, like I said, I won't be skiing after April 21st, I think. Maybe I will. Maybe in the middle of May, I'll be back skiing. It gets weird skiing then, because you really have to get up there early, and then there's only an probably 2 hours of good skiing. It's either frozen and crusty overnight, or it's too soft once it warms up too much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Starts to, as I say, it starts to suck, literally. Like your skis start sucking in, sticking to the snow.
Yep.
Very cool. All right. Well, thank you, Megan.
Of course. Thank you for joining.
Help entertain me for 30 minutes of my drive to Seattle today.
Oh, good. I'm glad. We'll drive safe the rest of the way.
Thank you. You have a great week.
Have a good one. You too, sir.
Bye-bye.